Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Every year in October, Nobel Prizes are awarded to people throughout the world. This year, the Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded to three astrophysicists for their work in advancing black hole discoveries. Roger Penrose, an Englishman, received one half of the award, and Reinhard Genzel, a German, and Andrea Ghez, an American, split the other half. All three scientists cemented the reality of black holes. Penrose, through his calculations that black holes are physically possible, and Genzel and Ghez in their discovery of a black hole in the center of our own Milky Way galaxy. This Nobel Prize is significant in proving an idea that has been imagined since the 18th century. To tell us more, astronomy contributor Jean Creighton joins me now. Jean, welcome back to Lake Effect.
Lovely to be with you, Audrey.
So before we get into the specifics of this year's Nobel Prize for Physics, let's just go back to the basics of black holes. I mean, I guess that maybe is an oxymoron, basics of black holes, but when were black holes first theorized and what are the basic properties of them?
Well, black holes were imagined before Einstein in the 18th century, but were kind of set aside. The idea that you would have potentially such a large mass in a small volume that the escape velocity would be equal to the speed of light, because the escape velocity from Earth depends on how much mass you're trying to escape from and how far you are from the center. So if you make the mass big and the distance between the thing that's trying to escape and the center of the object small, you can make that speed very high. You can make it as fast as the speed of light. So that was the first time the idea was conceived of. And then Einstein came up with his theory of general relativity in the early 20th century. He wrote out this beautiful equation, this beautiful simple equation that has mass on one side and space-time in the other, and basically described gravity as geometry. So gravity tells space-time how to curve, and then space-time tells mass how to move. That's the sort of succinct way of saying that equation. What I described very easily with words is actually a hard nut of an equation to solve. So it took a little while before Schwarzschild, a gifted mathematician, said, I can solve this equation. If I have a symmetric system, if it's non-rotating, then a black hole is a solution to the equation. And that still seemed very theoretical. And I think Einstein in his heart of hearts thought, yeah, but that's not real. That's not going to be a thing. That's a theoretical concept that won't be grounded in an astrophysical object that exists. In 1939, Oppenheimer, a physicist with some of his postdocs, suggested that you can use the equation of general relativity and that astronomical body will collapse into a singularity under certain circumstances. So he was starting now to connect a mathematical concept with an actual possible under which circumstances this could actually come to have pass. And this is where we're starting to get warm in terms of this Nobel Prize. Kerr in 1963 said, yep, it needs to be a rotating black hole. And the beauty now is, so let me just pause here just to get everyone's attention. So far, we've talked about a theoretical concept that we were trying desperately to connect to an actual object. And people had said, you know what, under very special conditions, yes, a mass of this size is going to collapse and it's going to obey that equation. It's going to be the black hole that we expected. Penrose in the mid 60s, so this was his main contribution for which he got the Nobel Prize, was that he had such a beautiful, elegant mathematical way of visualizing what this all means that he could prove that regardless of the individual properties of the black hole, whether it's rotating, whether it isn't, whatever it is, whatever it's doing, it could, in fact, it will always collapse if it's over a certain mass, which means that he connected that theoretical thing to any star over a certain mass will make a black hole.
And that's a big deal because, you know, for so long, as you mentioned, the idea of black holes have been around since before Einstein's theory of relativity. And I imagine just a lot of back and forth speculation within the scientific community for decades. And this Nobel Prize is celebrating, you know, these principles and the Penrose's further mathematical work that here's an idea and a theory that's been talked about for so long. And here's a fact now.
Right. And we'll go more onto the fact here, but I just wanted to celebrate exactly what you mentioned, that there is a period of time when you propose an idea that you're not sure. I mean, yes, things fall out of the math and you think, okay, that's nice, but I'm not sure that that's real. When you manage to cross the bridge to connect your math, what the math allows, to what actually happens, it's always a wonderful moment of triumph. Now, to press on, I just want to say one more thing about the work that Penrose did. After all, he did get half the award, not a third. He was also able to describe how energy can be stolen, if you will, from the black hole to power the very powerful jets that we see that come from black holes. And we see them at distant regions of the universe when the universe was still very young, in the form of quasars. So he was able to connect yet again something that was debated with observations that we saw, because we've been seeing quasars now for a long time.
So as you mentioned, it's significant that half of the Nobel Prize goes to Roger Penrose. And the other two people that split the other half are Reinhard Genzel and Andrea Ghez for their work revealing, quote, the darkest secrets of the universe. And we should note that Ghez is only the fourth woman in history to receive this physics prize for the Nobel Prize. So let's get into the other contributions of the other two parties here. And what other black hole breakthroughs were part of this Nobel Prize in physics?
Oh, I'd be delighted to talk about this. So we've always thought that the center of the Milky Way might have a black hole in it. It's possible, likely, in fact. But to really find, to figure that out is hard, because the center of our own galaxy is extremely crowded. There's a real traffic jam with all these stars. They're so close to each other. You look in the direction and there's all this dust and gas. I mean, it's really hard to see. And you're looking for something that's dark, right? That doesn't even provide any light. So the only way you can tell there's a black hole is what it's doing to its environment. That's the main way. So, two groups of people for the last almost 30 years now were using infrared telescopes that can see through the dust, and used all kinds of techniques to make the individual stars as sharp as possible, the resolution as good as you can, and they would follow the movement of individual stars. And if I'm allowed to use some sort of sound effect, you would see over a period of years, a star doing something like, it's moving kind of slowly toward the center of the galaxy, and then it goes whoop, and then it moves far. Like as it approaches the center of the galaxy, it really picks up the speed. And many stars do that. And they thought, wow, okay. So let's then figure out, given how quickly these stars are moving, and there are lots of them, they were following over a dozen, if we figure that out, how much mass is required in the center of a galaxy to make that star whip around like that? It turns out, and when I say whip around, I'm talking about speeds like 1,500 miles per second.
Quite a bit. I can't even fathom that.
So it makes a rocket seem really slow in comparison. So we figured out that the mass that is required is about 4 million times the mass of the sun in a volume that's, let's say, half that of the solar system. To put this in perspective, so that was 4 million solar masses. How many masses in the solar system? How many suns? Just one, right? So we've packed 4 million suns in something smaller than our solar system. We don't know any way to do that outside of a black hole. It seems like this is the most likely script. And what makes it better, I mean, this observation has been around for some time. What made it better was that in the last couple of years, one of those stars got really close to the event horizon of the black hole, so close that actually the light was having a trouble. It was getting slowed down, was getting stretched on its way out, which means that it looks redder. So they noticed that the star, that predicted redshift, they saw. So that was another sort of little triumph in the scheme of things. And they noticed that the orbit of the star shifted. So it doesn't just run the same route. It over time makes a rosette, if you will. That's a way to think of it. So as I said, they managed to use really sophisticated techniques over long periods of time, and they managed to measure and prove that there is but very strong evidence that there is a black hole in the center of our galaxy. And that reinforces the idea that there are probably black holes in most galaxies.
Right, and they call this black hole in the Milky Way Sagittarius A, and as you mentioned, 4 million times the mass of the sun. And I find it very interesting, just as someone, you know, a novice looking from the outside in, you know, how amazing a theory that's been around for quite some time just needed the right technology to catch up to it and the right math equation to quantify it.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And that's one of the excitements that we've been experiencing now on many fronts in the last, I guess, 20 years now. We're able to measure things that we in our dizziest dreams couldn't have imagined 50 years ago. Also from Einstein's equations, we got the idea of gravitational waves, and that got a Nobel Prize too. So it's nice to think that astronomy is having a field day.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Jean, thank you so much for joining us to give us a little more insight about the great accomplishment these scientists are given with their Nobel Prize.
It is always a pleasure, and I hope that we put the seed in our listeners, especially our young ones. You could be that next person, the problem that needs to be solved that needs your ingenuity. So hold on to that idea.
Lake Effect contributor Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium on the UW-Milwaukee campus. You can explore all of our astronomy segments at wuwm.com.